No fucking way, Riddick says, breaking through my panic. Tern? I can't bring myself to look.
Checking now.
The clipped, tense tone reminds me of Resson.
Join me in welcoming back your fellow rider, Jack Barlow.
Markham claps. The entire briefing room joins in, the loudest cheers coming from first wing as two figures walk down the stairs.
Breathe in. Out.
I force air through my lungs as Rhiannon grasps my hand and holds tight.
It's him, Rhiannon says. It's really him.
You brought down an entire cliff on his unhinged ass. Sawyer claps loudly, but it's only for show.
How the fuck was there anything left to mend?
Dragging my gaze left, I finally work up the courage to look. Same bulky frame, same blonde hair, same profile, same hands that nearly killed me during a challenge last year, before I killed him during war games the first time my signet flared. He turns a few rows down, walking past other second years as Caroline Ashton escorts him back to his squad.
It all makes sense now. The secrecy, her visiting the infirmary, Nolan's exhaustion.
Jack pivots as he reaches an empty seat, turning slowly and nodding as the applause carries on. The look on his face is almost humble, like a man who's received a second chance he definitely doesn't deserve. And then he pivots, looking up to the rose to find me. Glacial blue eyes meet mine, and any doubt I had dies a swift death. It's him. My pounding heart jumps into my throat.
Maybe he's learned his lesson?
Rhiannon's voice pitches high with empty hope.
No, Riddick says, letting his hands fall to his lap.
He's definitely going to try to kill you. Again.
An excerpt from Major Frederick's Modern Guide for Healers. Menders are not healers. Healers are bound to the Code of Krikton, sworn to aid all in time of need and never to harm a beating heart. Menders are riders. They're only sworn to the Codex. They can as easily bring harm as heal. Chapter 26.
Not helping,
Rhiannon hisses as we all stare at Jack fucking Barlow. A small, almost soft smile curves his mouth for an instant, and we fall silent as he nods at me, then looks away quickly before he takes his seat.
What the fuck was that?
Riddick asks.
I have no idea.
It's the first time since Parapet he's looked at me with anything but pure malice.
It's him, Tern growls. Bade has kept the truth hidden for these months.
I can see him. I'd ask how the fuck a dragon hides something in the veil, but Andarna isn't exactly common knowledge either.
Be aware of him at all times,
Tern warns. Rhiannon squeezes my hand as she shifts in her seat. Maybe a few months of being dead has changed him.
Maybe, Sawyer's eyes narrow as he stares holes in the back of Jack's head.
But I think we're better off killing him again.
I'm down with that plan, Riddick agrees.
Let's focus on keeping an eye on him, I suggest, forcing my voice past the knot in my throat as the applause finally dies down, allowing me to put my thoughts in order.
Jack? Is alive.
Fine. He's hardly the worst thing I faced last year. I brought down not only one, but two Venin. I destroyed an entire horde of Wyvern with Zayden. Maybe Jack's changed, maybe he hasn't. Either way, my signet and hand-to-hand skills have only improved, and I doubt he's been sparring in the infirmary. Riddick, Sawyer, and Rhiannon all stare at me like there's a chance I might grow a tail and start breathing fire at any second. I'm all right. I tell them. Seriously, stop staring. I don't have the option of not being all right. They shoot me skeptical looks of varying degrees, then face forward. Markham clears his throat.
Now, to our second matter of business for the hour.
He looks over at Professor De Vera. Yesterday evening, there was an unprecedented attack on one of our largest outposts, she says, her shoulders straightening as she scans the room.
Again? Rhiannon mutters. What the hell is going on out there?
She releases my hand and starts to take notes. A murmur rises among the cadets.
Focus. I have to focus.
And this, cadets, is no conjecture, no propaganda, no game. The last word is said with a sideways glance at Markham. It's unprecedented not only in its proximity, we've never had outposts attacked this close together before, but also because it involves three drifts. She lifts her pointed chin. I glance up at the mat, forcing my mind to work. Pelham near the Signy border is my first guess, but Keldavi along the Breivik border is a close second after it nearly fell last week. Maybe the flyers are recognizing our weaknesses.
They attacked Samara a little after sundown while most of the riot was wrapping up the day's patrol.
The breath freezes in my lungs and my heart stutters. She has my full, undivided attention. Who cares if Jack Barlow is seated beneath me or if papers are flying around with Peromish news? None of that matters more than whatever Professor De Vera is about to say.
They're alive. They have to be. I can't begin to fathom a world without Mira.
And Zayden? My heart can't comprehend the possibility.
Oh, God, Sigale's anger. I drop my shields completely, searching for a bond I wouldn't be able to feel from this far anyway. Still, I search.
Tarn? I reach out, but anxiety floods my bloodstream, overpowering every logical thought. It's not mine, but it may as well be. My heart begins to pound and my ribs close in on my lungs.
The outpost was successfully defended by the three riders who were not on patrol. Their victory is nothing short of astonishing. While no riders were killed in the assault,
her gaze snaps to mine.
There was one rider severely wounded.
No, the denial is sharp and fast.
Rage and terror pump through my veins. Professor De Vera lifts her hand and scratches the left side of her neck before looking away.
What questions would you ask?
The left side of her neck, right where Zayden's relic is.
Mira's all right, but Zayden.
I can't be here. It's impossible to be here when I have to be there. There's no reality outside of me being there. Here doesn't mean anything, doesn't exist. I have to go. I grab my bag from the floor and shove the strap over my shoulder.
Was the outpost breached?
Someone in front of me asks.
Vi?
Rhee reaches for me, but I'm already standing, moving down the row toward the staircase.
Cadet Sorengale, Professor Markham calls out,
but there's no time to answer him as I climb the stairs. No world outside the impossible-to-ignore drive that propels me up. My body isn't even my own because I'm not here.
Cadet Sorengale, Markham yells as I leave the briefing room. You do not have leave. Get to the courtyard,
Taren rumbles through my mind. We're on the same page, neither of us willing to wait for me to walk to the flight field.
It doesn't matter if the uncontrollable urge is coming from me or Taren, not when we both need the same thing.
Violet! Someone shouts after me. Footsteps race down the hall. Jack Barlow is alive. I whip a dagger from my thigh sheath and spin toward the threat.
Whoa!
Bodhi throws up one hand, the other clutching his rucksack. I don't want you to freeze to death on the flight there. He yanks his flight jacket out of his pack and hands it to me.
Thank you.
I take the jacket with motions that don't feel like my own. He's right. I would have climbed onto Taren without a jacket. At least I carry my flight goggles in my bag at all times. I can't stay. I can't explain. I can't be here.
It's Taren. He nods. Go.
I go.
An excerpt from Colonel Kaori's Field Guide to Dragonkind. By their third year, a rider must attain full and complete control over their shields. Otherwise, in moments of extreme stress, they are susceptible to being not only influenced by their dragon's emotions, but controlled by them. Chapter 27. By the time we land at Samara, just before nightfall, I'm a jittery, frantic mess. I can't bring myself to care about whatever retribution waits for me at Bezgaeth. I'll handle whatever punishment Varish wants to dish out. I've spent every minute of the 8-hour flight trying to separate my feelings from Terence, but I can't. And he's definitively in primal mode. He has to be the reason there's a hollow pit in my stomach threatening to devour all logical thought if I don't set eyes on Zayden in the next minute. It's Terence's desperation to see Sigale unharmed making my heart pound, not my own concern for Zayden. After all, if he was at death's door, Sigale would have told us once we flew close enough for them to communicate. At least, that's what the barely functioning logical part of my brain is telling me. This is all Terence. But what if it isn't? How seriously has Zayden been wounded? Sigale may have told Terence that Zayden lives, and I could see how bad it was for myself. But I'm still counting every second it takes the guards to raise the portcullis. The increased security is protocol and completely reasonable given yesterday's attack, but every moment that ticks by grates on my last nerve. Just because I logically know Terence is still flooding my emotions doesn't mean I can control them. The second the portcullis is high enough for me to duck under, I do so. For once, my size works to my advantage. I'm inside the outpost before it's even a quarter of the way open. Organized chaos reigns within. Chunks of masonry ranging from half my size to double it lay scattered around the courtyard, and a quick glance upward is all it takes to see where they fell from. There are scorch marks on the northern wall, too. The flyers must have breached the perimeter. The healers work a triage station on the southern end of the fortress, the area around them thick with wounded infantry. But there are no black uniforms among the blue, no cream either. Violet? Mira calls out, emerging from the northwestern staircase I know leads to their operations room. No limp, no slings, no blood that I can see. She's all right, just like Devera said. Only one has been wounded, and it's not Mira. Where is he? I yank my flight goggles from the top of my head and shove them into my bag without breaking my stride. What are you doing here? She grabs hold of my shoulders, looking me over with her customary inspection. You're not supposed to arrive until Saturday. Are you unharmed? Yes, she nods. I wasn't here. I was out on patrol. Good. Then tell me where he is. My tone sharpens as my gaze swings wildly, looking for him. Fuck, I can't even sense him with Terence overriding everything. You don't have to leave, do you? Gods, you're going to be so fucked when you get back. She sighs. Have to give it to Mira. She doesn't fight battles she can't win. He's in the sparring gym. From what I hear, your man is the reason we still have an outpost. He's not mine. Not really. Thank you. I turn away from her without another word and head for the sparring gym. I love her. I'm thankful she's all right. But all of that is buried underneath the desperation clawing at my soul to lay eyes on Zayden. The fortress is busy with recovery efforts, but the hall to the gym is deserted. Why would they have taken him to the gym for recovery? Is he unable to climb the steps to his room? That pit in my stomach deepens. How badly is he hurt? The mage lights more than make up for the dying evening light outside the three oversized windows when I enter the gym. But there's certainly no makeshift infirmary in here. Wait. What? I blink. Zayden is on the mat in his short-sleeved, muscle-hugging sparring uniform. He has both his heavy swords out, metal clanging against metal as he spars with Garrick. You're slow today, Zayden lectures, advancing mercilessly. He moves like he always does, with lethal expertise and complete concentration. There's zero chance he's even close to seriously wounded. The burst of relief lets me draw my first full breath since leaving Bezgaeth, but it quickly fades. Hands on him. I need my hands on him.
Not much I can do about that,
Garrick argues, blocking Zayden's advances.
Get faster.
Zayden lands blow after deliberate blow, deftly avoiding taking any himself. Each swing of those swords shifts the worry, the abject terror that he'd been hurt, into rage. He's unharmed, and I'm a fucking fool for letting my emotions run amok, for letting my love for him overrule my common sense. That's on me, not Terence. But the wildness I can't breathe through? That's 100% Black Morningstar tale. and I can't break free, can't raise my shields enough to own myself. I step into Zayden's line of sight, my toes hitting the edge of the mat. Zayden glances toward me, and his eyes widen for all of a heartbeat before he nails Garrick in the face with his elbow, sending him tumbling to the ground. Ouch. Garrick sprawls across the mat, his sword slipping from his hands.
Damn!
We're done, Zayden says without even looking back, already headed toward me, eating up the half-dozen feet that separate us with those long, prowling strides of his.
I had my shields up. What are you doing here?
His eyes widen, like he can feel the chaos within me.
Violence, are you all right?
What am I doing here? I bite out each word as my eyes rake over him, looking for the wounds Devera spoke of. Did I misinterpret her gesture? Did I really just fly here for nothing? My hands begin to shake. I have no fucking clue.
This isn't you.
His gaze sweeps over me.
I know that!
I shout, torn between weeping with gratitude that he's alive and seemingly unhurt and destroying this entire gym, this entire fortress, because he was ever put in danger.
I can't get him out!
Hold on. He shoves my pack off my shoulders and it falls to the gym floor before he sweeps me up against his chest. I wrap my arms around him and shove my face into his neck, breathing in deep. He smells like mint and leather and mine. For fuck's sake, I am scenting him? Zayden walks us straight into the gym's bathing chamber, and I get a quick glimpse of the polished stone walls, high, glazed windows partially cracked open, and a row of wide benches under the center of three lines of spouts, not dissimilar to the ones at Bazgaeth. With a flick of his fingers, the door slams shut, and then he works a lever on the wall. Water streams from the spout in the aqueduct overhead, soaking us both in what feels like ice. I gasp, my body tensing with the shock of the bitter cold. And for that heartbeat, it's all I'm capable of feeling.
Put your shields up, Zayden orders. Now, Violet!
I claw through the glacier of my mind and shove the bricks of my shields into place. Taryn's emotions dull enough for me to claim some semblance of control.
Fucking cold,
I say, my teeth chattering.
There we go.
Zayden flips another lever and the water warms.
What the hell happened that they gave you leave to come early?
Concern lines the area between his brows as he sets me on my feet, water spraying down on us. My mind is mine again, though I can feel the intensity of Taryn's emotions beating at my shields.
They didn't give me leave.
You didn't get leave? His voice lowers to that dangerous tone that terrifies everyone in the world besides me.
When you already know that Varish is going to...
His words die abruptly as his focus drops to my shoulder.
Who the fuck's flight jacket are you wearing?
Really? I throw my arms out, happily letting the warmth soak into me. It has a third-year rank, fourth-wing insignia, and a section leader designation. Who the hell's jacket do you think I'm wearing? His jaw ticks, water streaming down his face.
It's Bodhi's, you territorial asshole!
That answer doesn't seem to help.
Are you serious right now?
I unbutton the fucking jacket and tug at the sleeves. The leather is a bitch when wet, and it takes a moment to yank it free.
I ran out of battle brief the second Devera clued me in that you'd been wounded. Yes, I left without leave. Then I flew 8 hours at breakneck speed with an absolutely irrational Taryn who thought if you'd been hurt, then Sigale could have been too. And now you pull some possessive jealous whose jacket is that bullshit just because your cousin knew I was so panicked that I wouldn't stop for my own flight leathers?
I flat out glare at his nonsensical ass and drop the jacket to the floor.
You can fuck right off.
A corner of his mouth turns up. You are worried about me?
Not anymore, I'm not.
I see red. How can he find this amusing? But you were. A slow smile spreads across his face and his eyes light up. You were worried about me.
He reaches for me. Do you think this is funny?
I step back out of his reach only to find the water slick wall at my back. No. He cocks his head to the side, his smile slipping. You seem a little angry that I'm not at Malik's doorstep. Would you rather I be bleeding to death in the infirmary? No! Of course he doesn't get it. His life might depend on mine, but he doesn't feel the way I do about him. He wants me, even said he fell for me, but he's never said he loves me. I'm not mad at you for not being hurt. I would never want you hurt. I'm pissed at myself for being so reckless, so wrapped up in you, having such little control over my emotions that I just ran after you like a lovesick little fool. And you're always calm, collected, and in control. You would have waited for all the information, and you sure as hell never, ever would have let Sigale's emotions take over. My words die as Zayden wrenches up the wet sleeve on his right arm, exposing a puckered, angry red line that stretches from the top of his shoulder to halfway down his biceps. It's an inch thick at the top and triple that where it ends. He's obviously been mended. And if the scar is still that raised, he must have almost lost his arm.
You really were wounded, I whisper, all the anger falling out of my body. My chest clenches. It must have hurt like hell. Are you all right? The question tumbles out, even though I've just seen him demolish an opponent.
I'm fine. The scribe's report must have gone out before the mender arrived from the eastern wing. The scar disappears as he tugs the sleeve back down. And you're wrong about me. I wouldn't have waited for all the information, or even proof, if I'd heard you'd been hurt.
This time, I don't step away when he reaches for me. His arm winds around my waist, and his hand splays on the small of my back to guide us out of the water's direct spray. The inches between us are both a gift and a curse as he leans in.
I'm not always calm or collected, and I'm never in control when it comes to you.
My heart leaps at his words, at the ever-present tension that rises between us, at the awareness that spreads through me from that single touch. It's not just the water warming me. Even now, I'm not doing what I should.
His words come out clipped.
Which is?
Hauling your ass to the mat until you're a hot, sweaty, aching mess from a dozen rounds of sparring.
His jaw ticks.
Because I warned you never to put your life at risk over something as trivial as talking to me. And yet you did just that again.
I'm down with everything but the sparring.
Shit, that comes out breathless. And it's not up to you to punish me anymore. I'm no longer in your chain of command.
Oh, I know. And somehow, it was a hell of a lot easier on us both when you were.
You want full disclosure when it comes to me, right?
How is this for open?
His gaze drops to my mouth.
I would have done the same thing you did, because I'm just as reckless for you as you are for me.
A sharp, sweet ache consumes my chest.
Gods, I want to believe that. But I also want more. I want the same three words he demands from me. I run my tongue over my bottom lip, and his eyes flare as steam fills the room.
You were worried for me.
The first time he said it, it came out amused. The second sounded happy. But this time, his tone shifts, as if it's a revelation.
Of course I was worried for you.
He draws me forward slowly, giving me every chance to object before bringing our bodies flush. The heat of him soaks into every chilled part of me, and all the burning worry I'd felt on the flight here and the searing anger that followed transforms into an entirely different and far more dangerous form of heat.
Fuck. I want him. I want to touch every inch of his skin, feel his heartbeat against mine in assurance that he's really all right.
I want his body over me, inside me, as close as humanly possible. I want him to make me forget there's anything beyond this room or the two of us.
And you flew here without even stopping to get your leathers.
He lowers his head inch by torturously slow inch.
I nod. Because you still love me.
He whispers against my lips,
a heartbeat before he kisses me. Thank gods he doesn't wait for my denial, because I'm not sure I have it in me to give one. Not with the way he toys with my bottom lip, nipping it gently, then stroking his tongue over the curve. It feels too good, too right, too everything. It's the first time since Erasia that he hasn't waited for me to ask. The first time his infamous self-control has slipped. The first time he's gambled with possible rejection, kissed me simply because he wanted to. And fuck, that's exactly what I need, for him to need me. I part my lips in invitation, not just because I want him, but because he's acting on a confession I didn't have to pry out of him or even ask for. He groans, his arms surrounding me, and the kiss becomes exactly what he called himself, reckless. The feel of his tongue flicking against mine, then claiming stroking is a flame to a tinderbox, and I catch fire. Need, lust, desire, whatever it is, dances down my spine and gathers, becoming an insistent ache between my thighs. Rising on my toes to get closer, I loop my arms around his neck, but we're still not close enough. His hands work the buttons of my uniform, and I reluctantly relinquish my grip so he can slide it off. It smacks onto the floor somewhere to the left. I tug on his shirt, desperate for the feel of him, and he obliges, grabbing hold of it behind his neck and dragging it overhead, revealing miles and miles of warm, wet skin. I kiss the scar right above his heart and stroke my hands down his sides, my fingers tracing the hard dips and grooves along his stomach. There is nothing in this world that compares to him. He is complete, utter perfection, his body carved from years of sparring and flight. Violet. He tilts my head and kisses me hard and deep, then slow and soft, changing the pace, keeping me straining for more. My hands trace the lines of his back as he spears his fingers through the wet, loosened strands of my braid, then tugs, arching my neck before setting his mouth to it. He knows exactly where I'm sensitive, and damn, does he use every bit of that knowledge, sucking and laving that spot at the side of my throat that melts my knees and makes my fingers curl against his skin. Satan, I whimper, my hands sliding over the curve of his ass. Mine. This man is mine. At least for right now. Even if it's just these next few minutes. He nips at the delicate skin of my ear, sending a shudder of sensation down my spine. Then his mouth is on mine again, stealing my sanity and replacing it with pure need. This kiss isn't as patient, as controlled as the others. There's a wild, carnal edge to it that makes my mouth curve against his, making me bolder. I sweep my hand between us, then sigh. He's hard for me, the length of him straining against his waistband as I squeeze. Fuck, he growls, ripping his mouth from mine, his breaths as ragged as mine as I stroke him through the fabric. If you keep doing that, he slams his eyes shut and lets his head fall back. I'll actually get you, my core clenches. His gaze snaps to mine, and the conflict I see in those dark depths make me pause. Don't make me fight for this. Not again. I retreat from the warmth of his arms, and every nerve in my body screams in protest. I can't always be the one fighting for this while you invent new ways to hesitate or tell me no, Zayden. You either want me or you don't. You just had your hand wrapped around my cock, Violet. I'm pretty sure you felt how fucking badly I want you. He rips his hand through his wet hair. Gods, I am the one fighting for this. He argues, gesturing between us. I told you I'm not using sex as a weapon to get you back. You'll just weaponize it with your little rule to make me say the three words I'm not ready to give you. And that edge of maddening need he has me riding is just sharp enough that I might cave. I crave him that fucking much. Weaponize it against you? He shakes his head. You told me that you can't separate emotion from sex, remember? I open then shut my mouth. He's right. I did say that. Shit. Maybe I'm learning how. Maybe I don't want you to. He takes a step forward and cups the back of my neck. I want you exactly how you are, emotions and all. I want the woman I fell for.
It kills me every time I have to keep my hands off you, every night I lie awake, next to you, both blessed and damned with the memory of how hot, how wet, how fucking perfect you feel when I'm losing myself in you. My lips part and heat flushes my skin as if his words are an actual caress. When I do sleep, I dream of the sounds you make right before you come, and the way the blue in your eyes outshines the amber right after, all sated and hazy. I wake up starving for you, only you, even on the mornings you're halfway across the kingdom. This isn't me denying you or manipulating you. This is me fighting for you. He palms my hip, and his thumb strokes the bare strip of skin between my pants and my armor. You want to fight for me? I reach up into my hair and pull the pins loose one by one, letting them fall to the stone floor. Then take a chance without knowing how I feel. You want my heart back? Risk yours first this time. If I tell you how I feel right now, you'd never trust that I'm not just desperate for your body. His brow furrows. Exactly my point. The last pin falls from my hair. Choose, Zayden. You can let me walk out that door, or you can be the one who takes what I'm willing to give this time. I shake my hair loose and run my fingers through the wet mass to unravel the braid. Are you trying to bring me to my knees or win the argument? His hand flexes at my hip as his heated gaze sweeps over me. Yes, I answer, reaching for the ties at the small of my back that secure my armor. I just spent 8 hours terrified of what condition I'd find you in, and I'm telling you that I don't just want you. I need you. There are your 3 words. I tug the wet string and it gives. That's all you get. Take me or leave me. The fight within him is palpable, the tension between us enough to pierce dragon scale. And for a second, I think he might just be stubborn enough to walk away and keep us at this impasse. But then, thank gods, he breaks, fusing his mouth to mine, and the fire that had banked during our arguments flares back to life even hotter than before. He kisses me like I'm the answer to every question, like everything we've been and will be hinges on this moment. And maybe it does. His hands work the laces at my back while I undo the buttons of his pants. I win the race, sliding my hand beneath the fabric to stroke him from root to tip. The guttural groan he gives me feels like a reward and hits straight between my thighs, the ache intensifying to a throb. Let go so I can get you naked. He punctuates that last word with a nip of my lower lip. Yes, please. I free him, and he pulls my armor loose enough to tug it over my head. It smacks the ground, and a second later, the sensitive peak of my breast is surrounded by his mouth, flicked by his tongue. I moan, my fingers tunneling through his hair to hold him right there. That feels so damn good. Wrapping an arm around my back and the other behind my knees, he lifts, then lays me onto a water-warmed stone bench in one smooth motion. You sure you want this here, now? He asks, rising above me, blocking the spray of water from my breasts, his eyes hooded and his hair mussed from my hands. In 5 minutes, I can have you comfortable in my bed. He's so beautiful that my heart actually hurts from just looking at him. Now, my hands stroke his wide shoulders and down the relic that winds from his jaw to his forearm. Now, he agrees. There's nothing practiced or polished about the next kiss. It's all need sweetened with a desperation that matches my own, and all the hotter for it. This is exactly what I need, to be pressed between his hard body and stone, devoured with the same urgency I feel for him. His hand skims down my curves, following the dip of my waist before skimming my waistband and undoing the buttons of my pants one by one. There's no hesitation in his touch when his fingers delve and stroke from my entrance to my clit. My back arches and I gasp with white-hot pleasure. Even hotter than I remember. His mouth moves down my neck, overwhelming me with sensation as his fingers tease with feather-light touches. Fuck, you feel like silk. Hot, slick silk. His voice has that rough rasp to it that I've missed.
He moves lower to worship my breasts with his mouth, his teeth raking lightly over my nipple with the perfect amount of friction to build the pleasure coiling tight within me. Of course he knows what I like. This isn't our first time. It's not going to be our last either. Power swells under my skin and builds as he circles my swollen clit, denying me the pressure I need. Satan, I beg, my nails biting into the tops of his shoulders, but I'm careful not to brush his new scar. Every stroke of his fingers and flick of his tongue feels like a jolt of lightning through my system, electrifying every nerve until I'm a hypersensitive bowstring drawn too tight, but not tight enough. I know exactly what you want. He skims my clit, and what you need. Two fingers slide inside me. Deeper, closer, more. That's what I need. Then give it to me, I demand, my hips rolling. I've waited forever to touch you. My breaths come in ragged pants and moans, and my skin flushes, heat prickling as he builds the aching pressure with tighter, faster strokes. Gods, look at you. You are all I'm ever going to want. Just you, just this, just us. His voice curls around my mind until he's all I see, all I hear, all I feel and think. He's everything, watching me like he thinks the same about me. I need you. Maybe need isn't the right word, but there's no other term that captures how essential he is to my existence. I shove my thumbs into the waistband of my pants and push. I need them off, now. Same. We're a frenzy of questing hands and mouths as we struggle out of the rest of our wet clothes. I have a whole new reason to curse these boots, but Zayden makes quick work of them, stripping me bare. I ghost my lips over the new scar on his arm, more than aware of how close I came to losing him. And then he's over me again, bracing his weight on his forearms, his eyes studying mine with an intensity that makes me shiver with anticipation as he settles between my thighs. Reaching between our bodies, I wrap my fingers around him, bringing the head of his cock to my entrance. I'll die if he makes me wait any longer. I won't survive another breath without him inside me. I need you more, Violet. He cradles the side of my face and rolls his hips, pushing inside, stretching me as he consumes those first sensitive inches. However much you think you need this, need me, I need you more. He thrusts, filling me with one long drive until he's so deep that my eyes flutter closed, and I moan with a sublime pleasure. There's nothing like this in the world, I'm sure of it. So fucking good, he echoes my thoughts with a groan, and then he's moving, withdrawing only to slam home again and again, stealing my stuttered breaths with kiss after kiss. The stone at my back gives me the leverage to arch into his thrusts, taking him deeper. It's too much, too good, and not enough all at the same time. Each powerful stroke has me greedy for more. This is where I want to exist, with him above me, moving inside me, his focus totally, completely mine. Harder, deeper. I'm breathing too hard to speak. Don't treat me like I'm breakable. I know exactly how much you can take. He slides his hands under me, then holds me to his chest as he rises, pivoting to sit on the edge of the bench. My cry echoes in the chamber as I sink onto him, my knees anchoring on either side of his hips, and he hits that sweeter, deeper angle that steals my breath. Yes, there. Gods, I feel you everywhere. Right where we left off, his hands shift to my ass, with you riding me. I wind my arms around his neck and smile against his mouth. No one is coming through those doors to interrupt us this time. There's only the sound of water hitting the bench beside us, and our bodies coming together again and again, our hearts pounding, breaths strained between long, drugging kisses. Reality narrows to sensation, the exquisite feel of his chest against my breasts, his mouth worshiping mine, his cock filling every inch I have, stretching me for more. The pressure coiling in my core is so tight, the pleasure so sweet I can taste it. It vibrates through me as my power rises, transforming me into pure, rapturous energy, until I'm the very lightning I wield, crackling in anticipation of the strike. "More," he growls. "I want everything, Violet."
"You have it!"
His stubble scrapes my palms as I cup his face and kiss him. Lightning courses through me, building to a dangerous peak, and I don't need to ask. I know he has me. It releases with a snap, flaring bright outside the windows for a heartbeat before it's swallowed by shadows that stream out to smother it. Nothing shatters, nothing catches fire. He knows how my body reacts, knows exactly how to push me to the breaking point, and he has me covered when I explode. I love him. I love him. I love him. I'm not ready to give him the words, the power that comes with them, but I can keep them for myself, chant them like my own personal codex, the only truth I'm certain of. His body tightens beneath mine, his thrusts coming harder as he curls an arm around me, hooking my shoulder and pulling me into every thrust. That spiraling pressure arcs to a breaking point, and I fight, hold it at bay. Not yet. I want more. Fuck, I want to feel like this every minute of every day for the rest of my life. Let go. He shifts his angle, rubbing against my clit with the next thrust. I don't want it to end. I can hear the note of panic in my voice, the sharp note of fear that this will be the only time I feel like this, the only time he's mine. But the waves are coming closer with every roll of our hips, and my muscles tighten to the point of locking. Violet. His hand slides from my shoulder to the back of my neck, fisting in the long strands of my hair as he looks into my eyes like he can see straight to my soul. I can't give this up. I won't give you up. Now let go. My thighs tremble, and at the next thrust, I fracture with a cry. Lightning flashes, power tearing through me with instant thunder as the waves crest over me again and again. All I can do is hold on to Zayden and ride them out, bliss flooding my body until I'm too limp to rock back against him. Perfect. His restraint vanishes in an instant. Gone are the measured, precise thrusts. He growls into my neck and drives wildly with his hips, consuming me with abandon, and I realize that this is what I craved beyond anything else, even beyond his secrets, his loss of control. I want to be the only person he unravels for. Holding onto his shoulders, I push back into every thrust, swiveling my hips and savoring the shout he lets loose when he finally shudders beneath me, his shadows blasting through the room, rock cracks and water bursts from the aqueducts. My heart races as I grin. Fuck! His forehead rests against mine, our chests heaving as we fight to catch our breath. Just when I think I can handle you, I completely fucking lose it. That's my favorite part.
Why does that not surprise me?
He brushes his lips over mine, and he locks his arms around me, keeping me from melting off his lap.
Death of me, I swear.
What do we do now? The question slips out before I can stop it. After all, I'm the one who's been fighting this, whatever this is.
We have options.
He caresses the side of my face and studies my eyes.
First, we can stay right here and go again. Second, we can clean up, get dressed, and sneak up to my room, where we can go again. Or third, he pauses, we can clean up, find a water wielder to dry our clothes, get you into one of my flight jackets, and fly to the rendezvous to drop the daggers.
I'm up and running, grabbing for my clothes before he can even finish. Of course I'm going with him.
I'm guessing that's a no to options 1 and 2, he says with a disappointed sigh.
An excerpt from Griffins of Poromiel, A Study in Combat by Major Garion Savoy. Though griffin riders are not capable of producing signets, they are not powerless,
In fact, some would argue that they've honed lesser magic, especially mind work, into the deadliest weapon of all. Underestimating them is an error. Chapter 28. The thing about being two riders in an assumed relationship who happen to be bonded to a mated pair of dragons is that no one thinks twice about a midnight flight to get away, and there's no better view of the stars on the continent than from Taryn's back.
"I still do not approve,"
Taryn lectures as we cross the barrier of the wards a little after midnight. "And yet, we're still flying," I counter, shaking off the feeling of wrongness that sinks further into my bones with every wing beat. From experience, I know it'll pass once we've been out beyond the wards long enough for my senses to adjust.
"Only because I vowed to let you make your own choices after Resen, not because I agree with you."
He follows the slope of the peak, banking left to skim the landscape. Tonight's full moon means keeping a low profile.
"This is an unnecessary risk."
"One Zayden and Sigail take all the time." I stop fighting the wind and lean forward as he dives, grinning into the wind.
"The shadow wielder is not my concern."
"Sigail is." The saddle straps dig into my thighs, a constant reminder that I can't keep my seat without it.
"Sigail would never be taken down by something as puny as a griffin."
He scoffs. "And as for losing the shadow wielder, she would become emotionally inconvenienced. That is true." I scoff at his bluster. "An emotional inconvenience? Is that what I am to you? If so, then we don't need to worry that my death would cause Taryn's or Sigail's or Zayden's."
"You're currently a prize annoyance."
The wind steals my laughter, and I brace as we approach what looks to be a forested valley. The edge of the nearest ridgeline glows with the light from a Peromish village, but I'm not sure which one. Taryn flares his wings and gravity catches up with us, forcing me deeper into the saddle in the instant before he lands at the edge of a dark lake, jostling every bone in my body. Before I can get my bearings, he swings, leaving me grasping for the pommel as he puts his back to the water, facing the open meadow. That was abrupt. Good thing I'm still strapped in.
"Next time, you fly and I'll ride."
His head sweeps from left to right as Sigail lands next to us, Zayden on her back. "He's still pissed that I came along," I tell Zayden, reaching for the buckle.
"You've gotten strong enough to handle Atos,"
Zayden says, already moving for Sigail's shoulder. Moonlight catches on his swords as he dismounts.
"I'm more worried about the company the lieutenant keeps than Atos," Taryn growls, "and don't even think of dismounting, Silver One."
"I'm sorry?" I pulled the leather through the first loop.
"Undo that strap and I'll launch."
His head swivels, eerily snake-like, to glare at me over his shoulder. My jaw drops.
"You can't be serious," I whisper in a hiss.
"Try me."
His golden eyes narrow into slits.
"I agreed to come to the drop-off. I did not agree to endanger your life when we are easily within a wyvern's flight from Zolia. I, too, remember what happens to dismounted riders."
"You're being an overprotective ass." Not that he doesn't have a point. Maybe I'm not the only one with bad dreams.
"I am a credit to my line."
He swings his head forward, completely dismissing me.
"Don't worry, you'll be able to hear everything from up there." Zayden's voice carries from where he stands just ahead of Taryn and Sigail.
"Says the guy whose dragon isn't putting him in the corner," I grumble.
"I could have refused the rendezvous. This is a compromise."
Taryn chuffs.
"They're approaching."
It's on my tongue to fire back, but I close my mouth when I hear the wing beats of griffins. The sound is softer than those of dragons, less enunciated, like a gale wind instead of a drum beat. 7 griffins, a full drift, land in the clearing ahead and walk forward, their formidable heads darting left and right as they glance between Taryn and Sigail.
The griffins are about a foot taller than Zayden. And though I can't make out colors well in the moonlight, I can see their razor-sharp beaks just fine from here.
Please tell me you recognize them, I say to Zayden, my heart pounding.
Power rises under my skin and charges the air around me.
I do. You will in a minute, too, he replies, as if we're meeting friends at the local tavern.
Tarn lowers his head in a gesture I recognize as both a threat to them and a favor to me, allowing me to see the rest of the approach. The griffins, half eagle and half lion, halt about 20 feet away, and three of their flyers dismount, leaving the pairs at the edges ready to fly at a moment's notice. Our trust is as thin as December ice. One misstep, and the fracture will have deadly consequences. The trio walks towards Zayden through the knee-high mountain grass, and I recognize the one in the center almost immediately as the veteran that came upon us at the lake, that fought with us in Resin. Her face is a little more drawn, and she has a new scar down the side of her neck that disappears into her uniform, but that's definitely her. But the man on her left isn't the same. He's a little shorter, a little more wiry than her stocky companion had been, and there's no malice under those slashing eyebrows when he glances past Zayden and up to me before quickly looking away. I can't help but wonder if the man she'd been with at the lake was killed in the attack.
Ryerson, the woman calls out, pausing about 10 feet from Zayden. Serena, Zayden says, lifting two bags and then setting them down on the ground before him. The message is clear. If they want them, they'll be coming closer to Tarn and Sigael. Serena sighs and then motions the others forward. The younger woman walking on Serena's right is dressed in a paler shade of brown than the others. She looks to be my age and shares enough of Serena's features that they could be related. Cousins, maybe, or even sisters. They have the same straight noses, full mouths, lithe builds, and glossy black hair that contrasts their fair skin, though the younger one's is plaited in a simple braid over her shoulder. Her eyes are slightly larger, and her cheekbones are a little higher than Serena's. She's the kind of beautiful that would normally lead to positions in a king's court or on stage in the theaters of Caldir. My chest tightens. The way she looks at Zayden isn't just doe-eyed. There's an unmistakable longing there, a hunger that has me blinking. It's like she's been trudging through a desert and he's the oasis. She looks like how I feel.
Good to see you made it through the unfortunate assault on Samara, Serena says as they reach Zayden.
You want to explain what the fuck that was about? Zayden's tone ventures into a less than friendly territory.
Because one of your griffins nearly took me out. If we didn't have a mender nearby in the eastern wing, I'd be down an arm because I hesitated, thinking it might be one of you.
He glances at the other woman.
I thought we were on the same side, but I won't hesitate if it happens again.
I lean forward in the saddle, but there's not much give. Being up here, where I can only guess at what his expression might be, is torturous. Energy crackles in my fingertips, but I hold steady, keeping ready in case this drop doesn't go according to plan.
I can't control every drift, Ryerson, Serena responds, and I'm not going to blame other drifts and other chains of command who have to follow orders. We need more weapons than what you can supply. There are enough daggers in that outpost to arm 100 flyers. Those are powering our wards. His hands curl into fists at his sides.
Our wards? Since when do you sympathize as Navarian? And at least you have wards, Zayden,
the girl on the right argues. For now, Zayden looks in her direction for a split second before returning to face Serena.
That tone, the way she used his name. They definitely know each other.
The attacks have to stop, Serena, Zayden continues. In your chain of command or not, the second I hear of flyers actually stealing daggers from outposts or any Navarian wards being weakened by flyer thievery, I'll cut off what shipments we do have coming your way.
I suck in a deep breath at his threat.
You'll condemn us to death.
Her shoulders straighten.
You'll condemn us all to death if you take down the only wards standing between the Venon and the hatching grounds at Bezgaeth, I say. It's our only forge for weaponry, and there's enough raw magic in that range to feed them for a century. They'd be unstoppable.
Every head lifts my direction.
You're drawing attention,
Taryn growls at the flyers, and they immediately look away.
I never said I'd sit here silently. Nice to meet you without Ryerson's face attached to yours, Soren Gale, Serena says, her gaze diverted from Taryn. Smart woman. Though I'm guessing he still doesn't trust us completely if he's got you on the back of that enormous dragon of yours.
Zayden remains quiet.
I'm glad you made it through Ressin, I respond with a smile. Not that she can see it. But the young flyer does. She stares up at me in an unsettling mix of shock and... Shit, I think that's malice narrowing her eyes.
My last name isn't winning any friends to your left, I say to Zayden.
Ignore her.
We made it through thanks to you and that incredible lightning you wield, Serena says.
Another rumbling growl works up Taryn's throat as his head pivots right and he bares his teeth. Serena glances at the younger flyer and then blanches.
You know better than to stare at a dragon, Cat.
Cat, it's a fitting name for the way she's sizing me up.
Wasn't staring at the dragon, the woman replies just loud enough that I barely make out the words.
But she shifts her glare, aiming it at Zayden.
She's striking, I'll give you that.
What the fuck? Don't, Zayden replies, his tone dipping to that icy calm before addressing Serena. Soren Gale is right. You take down our wards, and there's nothing stopping them from draining the hatching grounds. They'd be impossible to engage, let alone defeat.
So you'd rather we die while you sit protected behind that very weapon that could save our civilians?
The man asks, like he's requesting the weather report.
Yes, Zayden shrugs.
My eyebrows hit my hairline.
This is war, Zayden continues. People die in wars. So if you're asking if I'd rather your people die than mine, then obviously my answer is yes. It's foolish to think we can save everyone. We can't.
I inhale sharply at the reminder that the man I get behind closed doors isn't the one the rest of the world knows. It's not the first time I've heard him express the sentiment. He feels the same way about the marked ones who won't work to save themselves at Bezgaeth.
Still an asshole, I see. Kath folds her arms.
We've lost riders to the Venon, too, he counters. We're fighting with you, but I'm not sacrificing the safety of our movement or our civilians for yours. If that makes me an asshole, then so be it. We're not just sitting behind our wards, either. I'm risking my life, risking the lives of the people I care about, to get you weaponry from Bezgaeth and to complete our own forge to keep providing that weaponry so we're ready when both Dark Wielders and Navarre inevitably come for us, which they will.
Completing a forge? Cat chances another glare in my direction. Viscount Tekaris would strongly argue with that statement. You have not one but two chances to acquire the luminary, and it's not like you haven't had what he's asked for both times.
Out of the question, Zayden bites out.
You're willing to let our entire kingdom fall prey to these monsters because you're what? Cat asks, cocking her head at Zayden. Smitten, please. I know you better than that.
Cat, Serena snaps.
My stomach lurches.
What the hell is she talking about?
Ludicrous as it might be, I think it's me. What the hell would I have to do with a Peromish Viscount?
Nothing of any consequence.
Zayden's tone is anything but comforting. Taryn chuffs.
We'll be discussing this later,
I warn Zayden, adding it to a never-ending list.
You know nothing where she's concerned.
Zayden shakes his head once at Kat before turning back to Serena. The forge is our highest priority.
As soon as we secure a luminary, we'll be operational and able to supply you in full. We have the rest of the material we need to begin. And that's all you get to know, because you're right, Serena, I don't trust you. Until then, there are 23 daggers in these bags. He points to the bags at his feet. 23? Serena asks, lifting a brow. I need one of them. There's no apology in his words or tone. Take them or leave them. Either way, Garrick will see your next shipment is delivered at the appointed location. He backs away, keeping his face toward them. It's near Athbeen. I'm not hiding it from you, just not repeating it in front of the rest of her drift. I appreciate the honesty. It's surprising and refreshing.
You have maybe a year until they're on your border, Serena says.
My stomach sours as I remember that Brennan thinks we have way less than that. I need to delve deeper into researching the wards as soon as I'm back at Besgaeth.
We're all that stands between them and you. You know that, right? Or are you still hiding your heads in the don't tell us too much in case we're interrogated Sams like you were last year?
We know, Zayden responds. We'll be ready.
Serena nods. I'll do what I can to lessen the attacks on the outposts. But until you can openly say you're supplying us, it's like asking our forces to believe in specters. They don't trust you like I do.
How you stop them is your business. I meant what I said.
He tilts his head.
Come for our wards, and I'll watch you die.
We need to get them under wards of their own. It's the most logical path. Sigale huffs a blast of steam, and the male flyer startles, then comes for the two bags and pivots, handing one to Serena on his way back to the remainder of the drift.
Thank you, Serena says to Zayden before glancing up at me. Tell your dragon he's still the scariest fucking thing I've ever seen, Sorengale. I would, but it would just inflate his ego.
I reply, settling back in the saddle as Zayden runs up Sigale's foreleg to mount.
Stay alive, Serena. I'm starting to like you.
She flashes me a smirk of a smile, then turns toward the other flyer.
Let's go, Catriona.
Catriona. Cat. The way my stomach hollows has nothing to do with Taryn's sudden launch into the night sky, and everything to do with remembering what Bodhi said weeks ago. I've never seen him care like this, and that includes Catriona. Oh, gods. The way she'd looked at him wasn't just longing. It was memory.
An excerpt from Article 4, Section 1, the Besgaeth War College Code of Conduct. Cadets who are found absent without leave will be subject to court-martial by their chain of command
if they are not executed on sight.
Chapter 29. Air steals the heat from my cheeks, and I pull my goggles into place as Taryn flies for the border with forceful wing beats. To avoid jumping to conclusions like last year, she's your ex, isn't she? I ask Zayden, hoping my mental voice sounds a hell of a lot steadier than I feel. How do you... Never mind, that's not important. Yes. He speaks slowly, like he's choosing his words with the utmost care. We were over before I met you. It shouldn't matter. I have exes, too. It's not like we've really discussed our sexual or romantic history, right? Of course, neither of them is a Griffin flyer who looks like that. But still, there's no logical reason for me to feel this ugly twist of irrational. Shit, what is this? Jealousy? Anxiety? Insecurity?
All three. Taryn responds in utter annoyance. To which I will remind you that not a single dragon chose her. You were selected by two. Pull yourself together.
His metric is sound, but has little to do with what I'm feeling. But at one point, Zayden chose her. I lean into the right bank as Taryn hugs the face of the mountain, continuing to climb.
And at one point, you thought gruel was a satisfactory meal until you grew some teeth and found the rest of the world's food waiting. Now cease this line of thinking. It does not serve to make you stronger.
Easy for him to say. Silence envelops me for the rest of the flight, and I breathe a little easier once we cross Navarre's wards. Then guilt settles like a stone in my gut. We're safe behind our shields, but the drift we just armed won't sleep with the same certainty. We land in the field, and I dismount after unbuckling, sliding down Tarn's foreleg.
Be ready to go in the morning, Tarn orders. Perhaps returning quickly will soften your inevitable punishment for leaving abruptly.
Because no one punishes dragons. I doubt it, but we can try. I lift my flight goggles as Tarn walks off with Sigale, their tails swishing in rhythm. It's a little thing, but it makes me smile. Zayden approaches, then winds his arm around my waist and tugs me to his firm chest before tipping my chin up with his thumb and forefinger so our gazes meet. Worry lines the space between his brows.
Are we going to have to spend our last few hours together talking about Cat?
No. I wind my arms around his neck. Not unless you'd like to spend them talking about my previous lovers. His focus drops to my mouth.
I would much rather choose our previous option number two, where we head up to my bedchamber and use our time judiciously.
Solid plan, I agree, my body heating at the mere suggestion. But we are going to have to talk about Viscount Tacharis.
Fuck, he looks away. I'd almost rather talk about our exes.
His focus shifts back to mine.
Who are your exes? Do I know them?
Tacharis, I arch an eyebrow. Now, I know you want to keep your secrets, but you told me you'd give me information if it could affect my decisions. And I have a nagging suspicion what's going on has to do with me. I trail my fingers down the side of his neck with his relic, simply because I can't help but touch him. So I'm asking you, what does Tacharis want for the Luminary, the one device that could complete your forge that you're unwilling to give? His grip tightens around my waist, pulling me even closer. Besides weaponry and a private army, he pauses, war waging in his eyes before he sighs. You're the first lightning wielder in over a century. He swears he'll let us take it to Aracia if he can see you wield. I blink. That part seems easy enough. It's not. Our first deal fell apart when I discovered he was only willing to let us use the Luminary, not take it, which would have meant stationing dragons in Cordon. And secondly, I don't trust him to stop at seeing you. He's known for collecting precious things and keeping them against their will. His thumb grazes my lower lip, sending a shiver of awareness through me. I won't risk it. Won't risk you. Doesn't seem like it's your risk to take, I say softly. He needs that Luminary, but maybe if I can get the wards up, that will buy us some time.
I told you in Aracia, I would rather lose this entire war than live without you.
He skims my jawline with his fingers before dropping his hand. I didn't really think you meant it when you said that. The ache in my chest damn near explodes. I love this man with every beat of my reckless heart, which would be his if he'd simply stop keeping all his secrets and let me know him.
You have to trust me again at some point. His mouth tightens. Going to Cordon isn't up for discussion. Brennan is already negotiating for different terms.
But I'm right here. You cannot protect me from every...
I glance over at the weight he slides into the deep sheath at my shoulder. The sheath that's only there because I'm wearing his flight jacket.
What is that? But I already know. The alloy in the hilt flashes in the moonlight before it disappears, tucked against my arm.
I need you to be able to defend yourself no matter what happens. You're not the only one with bad dreams, you know.
My lips part.
Zayden, I whisper, sliding my hands to his face and scratching my palms on the stubble of his cheeks. I'm a lightning wielder.
I'm never defenseless against venom.
You'll have to keep it hidden, of course.
His voice turns gruff. Sew a deeper sheath into wherever you're most comfortable. I nod. Right now, there's almost no chance anyone could spot it unless it was facing outward, or they knew where to look, anyway.
Anything else we need to discuss? He asks.
A grimace wrinkles my nose. Other than the Battle of Zolia getting leaked in battle brief and Markham playing it off as propaganda, my mouth twists. He simply stares at me this time. Or the fact that Nolan's spent months saving Jack Barlow's life? I turn out of his arms, and we start walking toward the outpost with its burning torches along the outer battlements. Oh, and Varish punched my shoulder out of socket during interrogation after Dane refused to use his signet on me. Zayden stops. Don't worry, I say over my shoulder, tugging him along. We escaped. They tried using this new elixir on us that dulls our connections to our dragons and our signets, but I remembered how it smelled from land nav, so we avoided that one.
Signet blocking elixir?
His voice rises. It's fine. If I can get my hands on the solution, I can probably figure out an antidote. I glance at him. Or Brennan can. His gaze bores into mine.
What happened to us working on that whole communication thing?
I could make you ask questions for the information, I flash a sarcastic smile. Did I mention that Dane challenged me?
I'm definitely not asking about the ridiculous statement he dropped on me about my mother.
Dane doesn't deserve my headspace. Shit, I should probably tell you about Arik, too. Zayden sighs.
So much for option number two.
There's an odd hope that fills me as Taryn and I land on the flight field at Bezgaiath the next afternoon. Maybe it's that I finally feel like Zayden and I are really, honestly trusting each other with more than just our bodies, even if he's not giving me full access. And his body is most definitely a perk. I'm deliciously sore from more than just the flight, as I dismount Taryn at the edge of the field to avoid the incoming landings as First Wing goes through third-year maneuvers.
Shit, I should have slipped the dagger into my pack before landing. Dragons and their riders are everywhere. With all these dragons present, I have no doubt that Varish and Atos have been alerted to your return, Taryn warns me.
I'll face my punishment, I respond, scratching the dull scales of his chin. You need to hydrate. You're all dried out from the flight.
Our departure was more my fault than yours. I will not stand for you to bear my punishment.
Stop being sweet. It's disturbing. I pat his scales one more time and heft my bag higher on my shoulder. It's been a couple of weeks. Do you think Andarna will wake anytime soon?
I miss her. There's no way to tell, he says quickly. Too quickly.
Suspicion finds home between my brows. Is there something you aren't telling me?
Every adolescent enters the sleep for whatever amount of time their body needs. Hers apparently requires more than most.
And until the last couple of weeks, she's been waking up every time I'm distraught.
Fuck.
Should I worry?
Worrying changes nothing. She is guarded by the elders and is sleeping safely.
I'll tell you if my punishment includes death or inconvenience.
I will already know, as I am continuously with you, he grumbles, forced to bear witness to the awkwardness that is 21-year-old humans.
I'll strive to make it less awkward.
Could you do so? I would think you would have done it already.
He waited until I walk in front of him, heading for the stairs by the gauntlet, and then he launches, his wings gusting wind at my back. I can't help but